Good afternoon. It is 4 minutes after the hour. Happy Monday. It's Monday, June 18th already. Awfully glad that you've joined me. Bill Arnold here with you. We've got a wonderful hour coming up. Drew Trotter is the Executive Director of the Consortium of Christian Study Centers. You can't say that quickly. And he's going to join us in just a minute. He's written about 20 books, and he's does a lot of work on books and our culture and the Christianity Today. He's a frequent guest there, and he is also has a wonderful seminar on how to view a movie responsibly. So we're going to chat with him coming up in just a minute, and then Kent Kaiser is going to drop in and give his 2 cents, adjusted for inflation, of course, towards the end of the hour, so it'll be great. I was thinking of liberalism the other day because I had some time this weekend when I was trying to stay out of the heat. And there was this, I saw on this tube, apply liberally. It's, you know, it's a lotion or a product. And, you know, you think apply liberally is, and you do that without worrying that you're using too much. Sounds like that's a great definition of liberalism. Anyway, that was my thought I had about liberalism, because it seems that as much as we all want to do the right thing for everybody, I always wonder, how are we going to pay for stuff when, if we're going to just try to invite everyone to come in? When I was thinking about immigration, it's a hugely polarizing issue today. And I'm just wondering, if we're a country of 330 million and 300 or 400 million want to come in, how is that going to work? Rebecca, you have an idea about that?
Well, it would take some fancy figuring, I think.
I think it would, wouldn't it? You know, I guess the question is, how many would be enough, right?
Well, and that's what each country has to decide for themselves.
Of course.
I think so. If we look to the rest of the world to kind of make that decision for us, then I'm not sure that we're being as responsible with our own resources that God has given us to steward here. I think that's a decision best made by each country, because they know their own resources best.
Yeah, and it's certainly a very emotional issue. It's polarizing our country right now, and I don't want to go into it, but I want to talk.
And yet, here we are.
And here we are, but I mean, I do want to talk about other things, but it's, you know, I would only want to look at the biblical view of immigration. That's really all I care about. My allegiance is to Christ, period.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to be parsing that out, I think.
Over the week.
Most of us will have to do that. You mentioned the word liberally, and I think something that might apply is in James. If you studied King James Version like I did, I grew up on the KJV, and the word liberally in my mind, when I think about the Bible, yep, is in James 1:5, because that's how it's translated in that version, is if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all men liberally.
Oh, I like that.
So I think that's something we could all use a liberal dose of,
yes,
is
indeed
God's wisdom.
So to just get that theme continued, we're going to have a verse from Scripture, and you might even recognize this voice, but I just want to say, I want a million people to read Scripture on this show. So if you want to record your voice reading Scripture, you can go on our studio line, 877-933-2484, and just tell me what the verse is and read it, and we'll put it on the show. And we're going to go to now a passage out of Proverbs.
Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not unto your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your path.
Welcome back to the show. My guest on our studio line is Drew Trotter. He's the executive director of the Consortium of Christian Studies Center. He was for 22 years the executive director and president of the Center for Christian Studies in Charlottesville, Virginia. He's written on film and popular culture for over 30 years. We're glad to have him with us this afternoon. Hello, Drew.
Hi, Bill.
You know, sometimes when I get my day started, I don't know if it's morning or afternoon. Are you that way too?
Sometimes, yep.
Yeah, I know how it is. So as we talk about movies today, I want to just talk about summer movies a little bit. I remember my movie days in the summer. It always seemed that they were very one-dimensional. You had a hero and a villain, and the villain was really, really bad, and we couldn't wait for him to die. And at the very end, when he finally died, it was like the most horrific death ever, and we were all cheering. What's wrong with us?
You mean, what's wrong with us to like that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I don't know. One problem is that life is not really generally like that. So we're living in a fantasy world there.
Yeah.
But it's also true that we cheer and celebrate the death of a bad guy. How do I want to put this? Mostly because we aren't really thinking that there, but for the grace of God, go we.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
That's why movies that are more subtle than that are better, I think.
I couldn't agree more, but I do sort of remember the summer themes of movies, and maybe I go back, maybe I'm going to date myself right now, but I think of movies like The Terminator, when that was like a big summer hit, and, you know, dating back to when they had one hero and one villain, and the villain was so bad, and you kind of cheered the whole movie that he would be taken out. And when he was finally taken out, we were happy. But I think, too, that your point is so well taken. The nuanced movies that are so much more engaging. I think they're so important because they spark conversations, don't they?
That's right. That's exactly right. And they relate more to the kinds of people we meet in real life. Now, people want to go to movies to escape. But unfortunately, I think it's unfortunate when they want to escape into a narrative that doesn't bear very much on reality. It's hard to say because the whole narrative that you're actually talking about with apocalyptic movies like The Terminator or Westerns like High Noon, if you want to really go much further back, those are tapping into a narrative that is true on a spiritual level. There is God who is perfect and is good, and there is Satan who is evil and is bad. And we want to see Satan defeated, and it's a good thing to cheer for Satan's defeat because he is the enemy who has no intention and has no hopes of repentance or of changing at all. But when we transfer that into the human realm and make enemies out of whoever we don't like, Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, for that matter, you know, either one of them, and they're the bad guys, and we want to see them lose, and boy, we're so glad that the good guys won, we really skew the way reality is, and in fact, even how we're instructed in Scripture to love your enemy and to do good to those who despitefully use you. So that's why I think movies that are more subtle and that are more thoughtful are actually better for us because they don't reinforce the other narrative on a human level. True on a spiritual level, but very different in the world that we experience.
Mm-hmm. Drew, do movies still matter as much as they once did?
That's a great question. And the answer is, again, yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of nuanced as well. The film industry and the making of feature-length films, hour and a half, 2 hours long, that go on the big screen in theaters, clearly is in trouble from the strong challenge that it's been given by long-form television, which are miniseries, you know, or the kind of things that Netflix is producing, Amazon Prime is producing. Many, many more people are watching movies on their devices now than are buying tickets to go into the theater. However, they're still raising the price of box office tickets and still getting the money and more than they got the year before. So as long as that keeps happening, the movie industry is going to keep producing full-length feature films. And besides the fact that many of those are what goes on to devices later anyway and are watched later.
Mm-hmm.
If you just dry up that stream entirely, it's going to be a very different world because the marketing of those things is going to be really hard to find. I mean, you have to be pretty much asleep to not know that Black Panther came out and was what it was.
Yeah.
Back in the early months of this year. But without all that hype, how would they have ever known and watched it on their devices? They wouldn't have. So now it's going to be being watched now that it's out on DVD and it's out on streaming devices. It's going to be watched by a whole lot more people. But if that original going into the theater hadn't happened, how's it going to work?
Right.
So it's gonna be interesting. It's not like the takeover by movies of the live theater that happened back in the day. You know, back in the 20s and the teens of the 1900s. But even that, by the way, live theater is still very much alive, and in fact is beginning to do better. And everybody's heard of Hamilton too, and we're 100 years past the so-called death of the theater.
Mm-hmm.
So we just don't know, but we do know this. The artists that are making movies today, the writers, the directors, the actors, they're telling very important stories that still have an impact on our culture, because you still have people in New York and L.A. and Chicago and the big city centers who write the newspapers, who write the novels, who write the stuff for television that we all see and are influenced by. They're still going to movies, and that's important. They're still having an influence on us.
Yeah. Drew, I want to take a little break here in just a second, but I do want to come back to the conversation and ask you about some of the movies that are out right now. But I also want to ask about how important are critics nowadays. It seems that a critic can say one thing, but if you go on a website and just see the 8,000 responses from people who have already seen it, that's got to be as strong of an influence as anything a critic might say. Let me just take a short break, and when I come back, we'll continue our conversation with Drew Trotter, Executive Director of the Consortium of Christian Study Centers. Be right back. Welcome back to the show. I have on our studio line Drew Trotter. He's the executive director of the Consortium of Christian Study Centers. We're talking about movies today and how, as Christians, we should view movies. And, Drew, right before we went to break, I was curious to find out from you if critics are still as important as they once were in the movie business.
You know, it's a funny thing. I think that they used to be very important because people would read newspapers before they went to the movies. That's where they found the ads for the movies to see what was on. And you would have references to Roger Ebert gives it 2 thumbs up,
right,
you know, and that sort of thing.
That's all you needed.
Then they went through a period of decline because all of a sudden you found out online whether a movie was on or not and when, and you didn't have ads and you didn't have the critics, you know, being quoted. And you don't have the powerful critic like a Roger Ebert, who is existent today. But what's happened in the last 2 or 3 years now is that Rotten Tomatoes, which is a website that picks up all of the critics and gives a movie a percentage rating of all of those critics, has become the go-to for many people in the movie-going public, especially since that stays, by the way, static, Bill, in an age range between 16 and 27. And those are what almost all movies are aimed for. If you're 67 like I am, you're 40 years out from that.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, I go to Fandango, and I can see the Rotten Tomatoes on the thing, and I go, well, maybe not. It's 35% rated. That must not be very good. It's actually the critics' ratings. It's not the people who see them, who often really, really like them. But nevertheless, it's having an influence again because these kids are going, seeing the Rotten Tomatoes and not going to the movie, or seeing the Rotten Tomatoes and going to the movie because, you know, the critics get to see it before the movie comes out. And they even make their decisions on the opening night of which opening night movie they'll go see based on Rotten Tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting how it's changed back around again to where the critics are important, but not in the way they would like to be. Nobody's reading a word of what they're saying. They're just taking in this percentage thing that's done by this extremely powerful website.
Yeah. It's interesting, Drew, because what I don't know could fill in an outdoor air stadium, because I didn't even know how Rotten Tomatoes worked. So Rotten Tomatoes is you take all the critics and compile all of their reviews into one, and that produces a score.
Exactly. They decide, Rotten Tomatoes staff decides whether the review is positive or negative or somewhere in the middle, and they assign a score to it. And then they take up all of those scores from hundreds of newspapers around the city, around the country, and magazines and websites, you know, people that review movies on websites and such. Mm-hmm. And they give them all an equal score. I like that about it. A.O. Scott of the New York Times gets one score, just like Joe Schlebovnik of the, you know, whatever,
yeah.
whatever Times.
We're not making fun of Joe right now, are we?
No, not really. But you know, A.O. Scott is supposedly this great critic right. in New York and the dean of all critics and New York Times and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But he's flattened out there in his impact. But nevertheless, all that added together makes all the critics important. It's really, really funny. Yeah.
Yeah. So as a believer, how should we – I mean, do you look at Rotten Tomatoes and go, that's code. I'm going to follow their advice. I'm not going to go see that movie. Or I am going to go see
no,
that movie.
Sorry. No, I don't. I look at box office, and I make sure that I've at least seen those, whether I like it or not. I mean, I get tired of superhero movies and Avengers 16 and all that, while at the same time, a lot of those movies are really well made. So I'm not sorry about that. But if a vast number of people are going to see it in the society, then I feel like I should be up to date on it too. And then, frankly, I listen to what my friends are liking or not liking, or I pick movies that I see are coming out and I want to go see, and I go to them, and I just get involved in the conversations that I'm involved in. And I have a little different situation because I write for a very limited audience, but I do write movie reviews and things like that. And, you know, I'm trying to guess what would be important for a few more people than most people. But most of us have a group of friends who are Christians that we ought to be talking to movies about. And most of us have a group of friends who are non-Christians. And movies are a great way into their lives on a sort of objective, non-threatening story to get into some serious questions about, you know, what they like. For instance, let's say I've got a non-Christian friend who went to see Black Panther. And Black Panther is very important for reasons of race in our culture. But to tell you the truth, the story is about whether a country is going to share its incredible wealth and incredible technological advantage with the rest of the world that didn't even know that this country existed. In fact, knew it existed, but thought that it was a very poor, backward African country. And if you talk about that theme, you know, what would you do? If you had all the resources in the world, but you were terrified of people taking them, or even from a good motive, misusing them like Hitler did or something, you know, would you share all your technology with the world or not? And then you can go, well, you know, let's talk realistically here. What about your wealth? I try to share what I've got with people. What do you think about that? How do you think about that? And wow, you could get into some pretty powerful places right away from just, you know, a topic, a theme in a movie that isn't threatening at all.
Yeah, that's great. That's great advice, Drew, because we can apply virtually anything we come across in our world today and put a spiritual application on it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a spiritual world.
Yeah.
This is the problem of the atheist. They think God doesn't exist and that does away with him.
Yeah.
You know, they don't realize the whole world operates in a very different way than either non-Christians or Christians who operate as if it's just a secular world and I just do whatever I want and however I want to do it.
Yeah.
And pay attention a little bit to the Bible every once in a while.
So,
it
Drew,
work that way.
How would we have conversations with people about movies that have a lot of gun violence in it? And it seems that a lot of the actors in Hollywood are so against gun violence, yet they seem to make a lot of their money with gun violence.
Yeah. It's a great question. I think you need to see violence in two ways in movies. And I'm not just trying to justify, you know, a pretty good superhero movie or whatever, but there are gun violent movies that are chilling to the bone, that are terrifically unsettling and difficult for us, and that could be horrible patterns for somebody whose mind is demented and who wants to then follow that gun pattern. Like the kids at Columbine who thought of themselves in terms of the killer in the Basketball Diaries. That was a direct influence on those kids, and it's terrible and unfortunate. But I think most people who go to the movies, and especially these wild science fiction things where 75 million people are being blown up, but nobody's really killed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no real emotional content
yeah.
to it. I think it's a different story, Bill. I think it's a different way of looking at it. Now, there is a whole other theory that movies that are super active, they have more of an influence on an active, less thoughtful personality, and they kind of justify that. And so people who don't think well go to action-adventure movies because that's what they like.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they don't realize that that's actually playing into a certain personality trait in them that could be devastating ultimately in their lives because they make decisions too quickly anyway, and they need to be slowed down and, mm-hmm. and made to be thinking more thoughtful, you know, mm-hmm. more thoughtfully.
Mm-hmm. So. Drew, talk a little bit about movies that involve demonic activity and spirits and, you know, sometimes even scary movies. I know people like going to scary movies. I don't get that. You know, I don't ever want to go to a scary movie.
There are some amazing horror movies out right now and the horror movies that are coming out soon, even in this summer watch period, because they are gaining in their influence in our culture. And it is a frightening, not to pun too badly, move. I went to see a movie just the other day called Hereditary that
Ooh.
Is doing much better than they thought it was going to do. And that movie is extremely difficult to watch. It is a twister where you don't really ever know what's going on until the very end. And when you find out, it is horrific. And it's the worst kind of spiritualism and demonic presence. It takes up pagan themes. It talks about kings in hell and positively in one sense, and has people falling down and worshiping the new king who's been taken over by a demon and all this kind of stuff. And that is disturbing. And it's disturbing if children are watching this. Now, it's an R-rated movie, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything. And with children who are not well formed, and especially parents need to be aware of these and really being careful what their children are watching, you've got that. Now, let me say this about that. There are a lot of horror movies where you don't really want to be the demon or the ghost. You don't want to be in that situation. Well, so what is the movie actually teaching you? It's not teaching you that demons are good and demons should be worshipped and we should all just become demonic. In fact, it is enforcing and reinforcing your distaste for them.
Mm.
So if that's the case, then why is that bad? That would seem to me to be good.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So, you know, you got to think about it and think what's really being offered. I mean, most gangster films don't end up with you wanting to be the gangster. They don't get away. They
right.
get shot. They
right.
get blown up.
They're, yeah.
Their sins have found them out.
Yeah.
You know? So,
well, Drew,
we got to think about it carefully.
I would like to continue this conversation only because I think it's I don't quite have a button on this one yet because I think we've opened up a small can of worms. Can I take a break and come back for another short segment with you?
Absolutely.
Terrific.
Sure.
I'll take a break and be right back with Drew Trotter in just a minute. Welcome Welcome back to the show. My guest, Drew Trotter, is the executive director of the Consortium of Christian Study Centers. He has been writing on film and popular culture for over 30 years and has written a number of books and blogs and is a great resource for how we look at the media and the entertainment and movies. And we're talking today a little bit about when movies get have demonic influences and spiritual stuff in it that kind of is creepy. And he just got done making a good point, and I wanted to just expand on it a little bit because, you know, I think of a passage in 1 Corinthians 14:20, Drew, that says, "Brothers and sisters, stop thinking like children. In regard to evil, be infants, but in your thinking, be adults." And we're not up against flesh and blood, but against spiritual powers and forces. So when we are drawn into wanting to see these movies, even as believers, you're suggesting that if you do see it, it's going to give you a feeling, what am I trying to say, disdain for, even a deeper disdain for spiritual forces. I don't even know if I said that right.
Well, I'm not sure exactly what you're trying to say, but distaste for them, yes.
Distaste, yes.
And we would want to fight them even more.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. Yes, yes.
And I think, too, Bill, of Romans 12, 1 and 2, where we're not to be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of our mind, to appreciate and accept what is true and good and beautiful. That the whole idea is that we have to know what this world is teaching and saying to be able to reject.
Right,
and that's another reason for thinking about these kinds of movies and this the great evil that is out there and the reality of the spiritual life. And when I think about it, Hereditary teaches the reality of the spiritual life and the paganism that is out there in some places, and how much we want to avoid it. Mm-hmm. To me, I don't see anybody who's in their right mind anyway who would go to that movie and want to become like those poor people that are cutting their own heads off in order to cause what the spirit wants them to do to happen. I mean, it's awful.
Mm-hmm.
You got to think about it a little differently. It's not just, oh, well, that's a movie about demons. That's obviously evil and done by the devil.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Drew,
the movie could be done by a Christian.
I can't even watch those trailers, Drew, because I started seeing stuff in my basement at 2 in the morning. I don't know how people can watch those movies. Does it not affect you?
Oh, it doesn't affect me, I think, because I'm going, hey, that's Toni Collette. She was in X. I mean, I just have enough knowledge to know, even as I'm sitting in the movie, that this is just a movie.
Okay.
And I think we need to build ourselves into that. But I still enjoy them, and I can still weep. In fact, it's one of my signs of whether it's a really good movie or not, as to whether it's actually made me, you know, get so involved in the story that I sit back, you know, and don't objectify it.
Yeah. Drew, do you find yourself leaving a movie like Hereditary and having a time of prayer just to try to pray through what you just saw?
Bill, I tell you, my view of movies is that much more influential and much more devastating and much more in need of prayer are the times when I go to a nice comedy that's got the F word all the time,
mm-hmm.
or I go to a movie that has a lot of explicit sex in it,
mm-hmm.
because I'm a lot more tempted to that.
Okay.
You know, I want to say this, though, in answer to your question, I pray all the time. As I go to movies, as I come out of movies, and I pray against or for the kind of influence that they could have. And I just think it's very important that we approach our entertainment life with prayerfulness.
Mm-hmm.
People don't even think about that, and that's really too bad. They only think when they leave a movie that surprised them and was really hard to watch that that's the movie to pray about.
Mm-hmm.
Not true.
Yeah. Drew, what if someone is listening today that actually saw a movie that left such a bizarre imprint on their brain that they still – 15 years later, when they go down to the basement, they have to check the closet to see if someone's in there.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think you just pray that that the Lord would remove those images from your mind, that sort of thing. But I also want to say this. one of the things that I do, Bill, is I do a movie seminar called How to View a Movie Responsibly. And when I teach people what is going on to try to manipulate you in a film, and I'm using that word because Steven Spielberg said that buying a ticket to the movies is buying a ticket to manipulation. He knows that he's trying to manipulate the audience, and everybody else who makes movies is trying to manipulate the audience. They know that, and they admit it. What your job is to not be manipulated.
Right.
So you need to learn some principles of how movies are made to sort of objectify that experience. And frankly, that increases the entertainment value. I mean, I'm so sophisticated now in one sense in that I go and say, wow, that's a great shot. How did he do that with the lighting and, you know, stuff like that? It may take you, quote, out of the story, end of quote, but that's only good. And frankly, it usually doesn't do that anyway. It doesn't last for very long. But you're objectifying this thing and reminding yourself of something that is true. It's only a movie.
Okay.
Now, I'm, go ahead.
Oh, no, please, finish.
No, I was just going to say that it's only a movie cuts both ways. It is only a movie. But movies without that kind of guard up and without that kind of knowledge can be devastatingly powerful as an impact on you. And the answer is not, so let's just don't go to movies. It's not the same as let's just don't jump out there in front of machine guns.
Right,
you know?
Right.
It's not true. Movies can be a wonderful source of encouragement and benefit to you. I saw a movie at the Sundance Film Festival this year that won the Audience Award, and it still hasn't come out. And I hope that it's going to be released sometime in the next 6 months or 12 months, called Burden, about a Ku Klux Klan member who gets ministered to by a black evangelical pastor, a wonderful guy who just every other word is Jesus in a good way. And he loves the Lord. And this guy, the movie ends with this guy asking for forgiveness of all those black people on the riverbank as he's about to be baptized as a Christian. Now, you can say what you want about the movie industry, but dadgummit, that was at the Sundance Film Festival. And the people liked it because it was so well done. It was such a unique story.
That is a unique story.
And the black pastor was played by Forrest Whitaker, who's one of the great black actors in the world today, won the Academy Award. The young guy, it's a true story too, by the way.
Is it a Clarence Jordan?
No,
okay.
No, it's about a guy named Mike Burden.
Okay.
So it's called Burden. You can Google him. Just Google Burden Ku Klux Klan.
Okay.
And he'll probably, you know, bring up the movie or something, but, his story is remarkable.
Okay. So, Drew, obviously we're on the right direction now because we want to be able to redeem our time when we go to the movies. We want it to be time well spent. But we can use entertainment to strengthen our spirits and build ourselves up, can't we?
Right. Absolutely. I mean, I have not seen Incredibles 2 yet, but I loved the Incredibles, the Pixar movie.
Mm.
You know, why in the world have we given animation up to children? That's ridiculous.
Right.
Some of the greatest movies made in the last 20 years have been Pixar movies.
Up, for
and,
one.
And with, wonderful, wonderful movie, Up. Toy Story 3. Toy Story 1 and 2, for that matter. I watched them with my grandchildren the other day and was as emotionally moved as ever before as a believer. Now, you have to translate a lot of stuff. A lot of it is, you know, just good values being portrayed and being reemphasized and being strengthened. It's not as direct as this Burden film is, you know, about Christ and about salvation and what that actually is. But nevertheless, it can be really encouraging and strengthening for you. And I'm looking forward to Incredibles 2 in the same vein, because most of the Pixar movies are that way. Not all of them, but most of them.
All right, Drew, let's say I've saved $10 to buy a movie ticket and I've saved $71 to get popcorn and a small soda. What movie should I go to?
Well, I would say right now, The Incredibles 2, okay. Even though I haven't seen it.
Okay.
Because I haven't seen anything else out there recently.
Yeah.
It's great.
I did hear there is a strobe warning in that movie that they're taking quite seriously now.
I heard that, and I just heard that today. So, yes, that's interesting.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Does it surprise you at all that the movie of John Gotti with John Travolta took in $1.7 million over the weekend, which is unbelievably low?
It's interesting. It's not getting the publicity that the movie, the company feels like it should. And that means they're not so sure that it's that good.
Okay.
So it's a vicious circle. If you don't see much publicized about a movie, then it means that the company isn't real sure about it. And so it means that it's not going to sell as many tickets anyway. And what they're hoping for is that they've saved the money and it's going to touch something in the people, sort of like Black Panther, although not nearly. That's just extraordinary levels. Everybody expected Black Panther to make $150 million.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody expected it to make $600 million.
Yeah.
And it's moving towards a billion if it hadn't already passed it.
All right, one last One last question about the Mission Impossible franchise. Do you like that?
Yeah. I like the Mission Impossible movies. You know, the good guy figures out something against bad guys. Unfortunately, the bad guys are usually representatives of our own government, which is not really good as far as I'm concerned. I think the U.S. government takes it on the chin in a lot of ways from the movie industry on a regular basis, and that's too bad. But, they're a lot of fun.
And then I do find it fascinating the way a lot of these stunts in these Mission Impossible movies are being done by Cruise himself. I do have to hand him a lot of credit.
That is really true. And, you know, you don't want to follow Tom Cruise religiously because he's a dyed-in-the-wool Scientologist, but very strong in the Scientology movement, which is a very corrupt cult. But his values are strong in some areas, at least in terms of the movies that he makes. And I appreciate that. He says, listen, for me not to do those stunts would lessen the impact for the viewer. I want to do what I can. Plus, I love doing them. So he doesn't care about risking his life. And boy, it's crazy.
It is crazy. And the one thing I thought is interesting about Cruise is he does have a very strong work ethic.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Well, Drew,
that is exactly right.
It's always interesting to get your perspective on things. Thank you so much for coming out of the show today. And thank you for your work and your insight and your wisdom. Just a delight.
Thank you, Bill. And thank you for the good questions.
Oh, really good.
Thoughtful. I appreciate that.
I'm glad you liked them. We'll
talk to you again soon.
I will indeed. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Yeah, welcome to the show. I'm so glad I've got Kent Kaiser in studio with me. He is chair of communications here at the University of Northwestern. I always love his take on so many things. And Kent, recently you just competed in a bagpipe competition over the weekend. Do share.
It's true. We went to Chicago with the McAllister bagpipe bands, and there's two bands. My band came in sixth place out of 14, which is pretty good because we had two people who had never even competed before in our band. And then the other band, the better band, came in fourth place, and this is the biggest Highland Games in the country. We, at the end of the day, we have what's called massed bands, where everybody goes out on the field. Every bagpiper is out on the field, and there were well over 500 of us. So if you can imagine 500 bagpipes all playing Amazing Grace and Scotland the Brave and everything, you probably could have heard it from here in the Twin Cities if you just listen close. But it was like 95 degrees, and there we are out there in our wool kilts and our vests and long sleeves and ties and caps. Yeah.
So in other words, brutally painful.
Well, you know, it's a good time. It actually is a fun time.
Yeah. No breeze, nothing, right?
There was a good breeze. Thankfully, there was a breeze this year. And this year, we actually got to have the mass bands. The past couple of years, it's been hot. And then at the end of the day, we get these giant thunderstorms that roll in and wash everything out because we don't play if it lightning.
Sure.
We will if it rains, but not in lightning. And the last couple of years, we had just massive storms come through and just drench us. And so this year, it was actually a blessing to have nice weather so we could have the massed bands because it is really impressive.
Now, I remember when we were when I was doing the morning show, and there was the talk probably 7 or 8 months ago that you were saying, I can hardly wait for June because that's when all the Supreme Court decisions were
made. And here we are.
And I just want to take a few minutes today to talk about what's happening, the gerrymandering. Let's start with that one.
Yeah, this one's interesting because for people who don't know, gerrymandering is the name that's given to the way that legislatures draw the lines for congressional districts and for legislative districts after each census, because the idea is that every congressional district is supposed to have exactly the same number of people in it, if possible. And each legislative district within a state is supposed to have the same number of people in it, you know, based on the census. And over the years, the Supreme Court has ruled that you can't have districts that are racist. In other words, you can't pack all the black people into one district and make the lines really weird to just carve in all kinds of all the black neighborhoods and things like this. However, they have never ruled on whether you could draw the lines in such a way that they are gerrymandered to include political partisans, so that you would have all the Republicans packed into a certain district or all the Democrats packed into a district, or make the district so that you go over and grab just enough of one party or the other so that the district, a lot of the people who are, you know, maybe say Democrats are represented for sure by a Republican because of the way the districts are drawn. And some of the districts do look funny. The way that the word gerrymander was started was, it's a portmanteau of this one Elbridge Gerry, who was one of our forefathers, and salamander. And you put those two, his name and salamander, together, and you get gerrymander. And that's where it comes from, because some of the districts actually back in the day looked like salamanders. Now they look even more complex than a salamander laying there on a map. And that's what was before the Supreme Court. But the Supreme Court decided not to rule on it. Some outlets are saying that they punted on it. So it was a 9-0 ruling that they let stand these oddly shaped districts that are districted partisanly. So, it does cut both ways, by the way. I mean, right now we have many more state legislatures and governors who are Republicans than we have Democrats. And so it's more the Democrats who are complaining about it right now. But the reality is that in some states, for example, in Minnesota, we do have districts that are pretty safe for Democrats. I mean, in Congress, the districts that include the city of Minneapolis and the other district that includes St. Paul are extremely safe for the Democrat. No Republican will ever win those. So if we were to have to say, we need to make these all competitive, they'd have to reach out quite far with the lines and draw kind of a funny looking district in order to make either of those districts even remotely competitive. Because I'm telling you, I live in St. Paul. I live in an area where it's about 80% Democrat. To make my district even just a little bit competitive, they've had to reach out many, many, many miles into rural Minnesota to capture enough voters to make my district competitive. So it does cut both ways, and people should realize that. But right now, because Republicans have done the work of capturing all these state legislatures and these governorships, right now the map is very Republican. It's true.
So if we were to do a bagpipe convention in one of these heavily Democratic districts, do you think we could scatter some of the Democrats?
I give my liberal friends a lot of grief because they have gone ahead and, compacted all of their population in a few states. I mean,
That's true.
If they didn't all just move out to California or out to the coast, they might have a chance of actually winning a national election. But, they amassed their population in a few cities. And
that's true.
And so, of course, they're going to have their congressional districts all in just a few spots, on the coasts and not much in the middle.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it is actually a thing. I mean, many of my friends over the years have moved and, they've I just watched as people have job opportunities. If you're making the choice of whether you want to move to Ohio or whether you're going to move to New York, well, Ohio makes a lot more sense for a Republican. Or if you have the choice between Georgia and Texas or Georgia or Texas or out to California, well, you're going to pick Georgia or Texas. I mean, you know, you're going to pick some place that is not – and it's not necessarily the number one factor in your calculation of where you want to move. But it's certainly part of it with all my friends. I can tell you, like, a lot of my friends have moved over to Hudson, Wisconsin from – and they work in the Twin Cities here because Wisconsin is a much more Republican state. Mm. And they have a half-hour commute and much lower taxes.
Wow. So, Kent, what do you think about the idea that California wants to try to divide into three states?
Wouldn't that be fun?
I mean, I don't think it could ever happen, could it?
I don't think it'll happen, but it is on the ballot for this fall. It'll be interesting to see.
So how does that work? Would they have, what, six senators then from
there would be
California,
six,
which they'd all be Democrats, wouldn't they?
Well, there would be six U.S. senators. I don't know. I saw the map. It seems to me that Republicans might have a chance in two of those new states.
Yeah. And then are all of our flags no longer good? Do we have to make new flags with 52 states?
We have
to
make new flags, you know. As long as we're at it, might as well bring in Puerto Rico. And you
might
know,
as well.
Right?
Yeah. So are there any other decisions from the Supreme Court that we're still waiting on?
We are looking forward to hearing what they say about a case on union dues.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and whether you're required to pay the union dues even if you disagree with the politics of the union.
Where do you think that one's going to go?
I don't want to speculate because I'm too hopeful.
Okay.
I think it's.
Do you think you're going to jinx it if you act hopeful?
In a way, I think. Okay. I think that they're going to come. I think that they'll probably come down on the side of the employee. But you know, we'll just pray that that's the case.
Yes. Yeah. What about some of the rhetoric coming at the president from, let's say, the left and the elite? Some of the vitriol that's happened against him. Is it energizing the Democratic base or also energizing the Republican base?
I think it more energizes the Republican base.
Is it backfiring?
I think it is backfiring, and I think it has all along. And I just think that they don't even recognize – I think the Democrats don't even recognize what they're doing. And from what I can tell from the polls I've seen, the average Democrat voter is not particularly motivated for this fall or for the upcoming election. But it seems like Republicans are.
I'm surprised you're saying that, to be honest.
Well, they just don't seem to. It's like you could, you know, they've been so shrill for so long. You can't maintain, you know, people's energy, especially when what they see on the ground is, I mean, things are going pretty well. And so it's hard to generate any real animosity toward the president from actual voters when things are going along pretty well.
Yeah. What issues are they going to jump on to say we've got to do things better or differently?
Yeah, see, they don't really
they can't go after the
much.
Economy because the economy feels pretty strong.
Right.
So what are they going to go after? The immigration issues, the climate change? What do you think?
Well, I think that they, you know, they're going to continue to go after President Trump's personality and things, but we've already had a referendum on that. And so I just don't think that they've got any kind of a winning issue from what I can tell. I mean, what I've seen of candidates right now is they're complaining about the opposition research and they're complaining about the trackers who follow around the candidates and videotape them and things like this. I'm like, great, go ahead and run on that. That's, you know, nobody cares about these things at all.
Yeah. And the immigration issue going on right now at the border, I'm asking you this just with a minute left so you don't have to feel like there's a lot of pressure to have a nice long answer to this. But as these families are getting ripped apart, I know this is quite emotional.
Right. And this is one where I don't think that President Trump has the upper hand in terms of the public relations aspects of it. I think that he's let that one slip away and something's going to have to happen pretty soon. I think he was hoping for this issue to be leveraged to get the Democrats to move and reform our immigration system. But I don't think that that's probably what's going to happen here.
Mm-hmm. Kent, always nice to have you in studio. Thank you so much for making time in your semi-busy afternoon to come up and visit with me today. I appreciate that.
Thanks for having me on.
And nice victory for you and your bandmates. What do you call the bandmates? The bagpipe bandmates. What are they? Your team?
Pipers. I don't know.
But it's always an education. So thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks.
Thanks so much to Kent Kaiser and also to Drew Trotter and Mark Rutland. We just had a great show today. And as I'm thinking about 1 Peter chapter 4, so, since Christ suffered in the flesh, you also arm yourself with the same attitude, because the one who has suffered in the flesh has finished with sin. Think about that one. As you have suffered in the flesh, you have finished with sin. So that wraps up our show for the day. We've got a great show coming up tomorrow. So I would appreciate you tuning in tomorrow as well from 3 to 5. And that wraps up our day. So have a great evening. God bless, and I'll see you tomorrow.